This week's show is the second of two that I've dedicated to a personal story, that of Nanette McLeod Johnson. We're about to hear the end of her story, and following that, I shall be talking to Robert Verkirk of the Alliance for Natural Health about some of the many issues raised by Nanette's extraordinary story. If you didn't hear last week's show, then I strongly suggest you hold fire now and find it on Listen On Demand. That's in the lower section of the Yes to Life show page on UK Health Radio. Once you've listened to that, you can then come back to this week's show, which is also on Listen On Demand. Today's show only really makes sense after listening to last week's.
I mean, I was as rock bottom as I had ever been. I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't dress myself. I couldn't stand up and go to the bathroom without feeling I was going to pass out. I couldn't speak to my children. Constant headaches, not being able to sleep, but not being able to, you know, being exhausted. There's all of these horrible things going on. And I just had enough. And I'd said to myself, you know, I have enough medication next to me in my bedside drawer for this all to be over very quickly and nobody needs to know. And the children weren't there. There was Danny down the stairs. It was evening time and I'd gone through this whole day crying, the entire day, crying and crying and crying, till my eyes were swollen shut almost. And I was on my own. And it's not because Danny deliberately left me, but he knew that I was struggling. So, you know, I was on my own all of that time crying. And in that moment is when I decided that I would make one last ditch attempt to just, that would be the end, you know. And I had left notes for the children not to ever be informed about this, but just to, you know, because it's not, I didn't want them to have that to live with, but just that I wasn't very well. I wasn't very well, and, you know, and I passed away in my sleep. Something along those lines that was much more simple. Unfortunately, when I actually did this, it was couple of hours later and I was still just about with it. I wasn't quite, you know, sort of I was still just about with it. I had said goodbye on Facebook without realizing I was doing this. I didn't know that I was doing this, and that in itself had triggered somebody to phone Danny. Danny ran upstairs, found me. By that point, I think I was already out of it, but he had found me, phoned an ambulance, and I was whisked to hospital.
Social media, the power of it.
Oh, eh? You're not kidding. I mean, I'm humiliated, still to this day, humiliated about that message, that goodbye to everybody, or sorry and goodbye, basically it was. But ultimately relieved as well, because, you know, had that not happened, well...
Yeah, amazing.
It was already 4 hours or more, I think, according to the blood tests, it had been in my system for too long to pump out my stomach. Had already had started to take its toll on my liver, and I was having terrible murmurs with my heart anyway, which I was struggling with at times. I was having murmurs throughout the pregnancies, and again, whenever I was taking medications, it would get worse. So I'd have these sudden jolts of the heart and always very low blood pressure and all of these other things. So yeah, they were quite concerned, but they weren't going to let me go home. So they sent me to a psychiatric ward, which I was none too pleased about at the time. But it was in there a few days after, you know, I'd left the hospital ward, when I was in the psychiatric ward, and I was looking at the bathroom door, and the door in the bathroom was sliced from the top corner down to sort of shoulder height. And the reason that they do this is so that they at any time can look through the little window that goes into your room, and they can see you in there in the shower. And they can only see your head and things and shoulders, but it just dawned on me what had happened. How did I get to this stage? How is it that I am now an inpatient at the very place that I had spent so many years working toward, being the one to help?
So ironic, isn't it?
So ironic. And I just broke down. I just could not believe that this had happened. It was not my intention. You know, nothing. I certainly didn't want to end up in there. And I eventually spoke to one of the people in there, and I had said, you know, I don't think I need to be here. I think I need to go home, and I think I need to make a lot of changes. And of course, I had to convince them that I wasn't going to go home and just do this again, because by rights, they have to make sure that that's the case. However, having spoken to the consultant that was on the ward at the time, she said that she thought that I had been through so much, and that, you know, that she could, she believed that I meant it, that I was serious, that I wanted to put things right, and that. And she said, "You are very different to a lot of the patients in here. I'll give you that." And that sort of made me think, "Okay, phew, it's not just me, you know. It's I really shouldn't be here. This is just down to me making, you know, very silly decisions under a very difficult set of circumstances." And that whole self-induced being in there, I did not need to take up any more of their time. I, you know, it wasn't that I wasn't mentally ill in the fact that I didn't know what I was doing. It was that I was just, I didn't know how to get out of that. I didn't know how to put things right. And but that was the turning point. That was a huge turning point. And she went to give me, she says, "Okay, I'm going to send you home, but I'm going to give you exactly what you need medication wise for the next few days, and I'm going to release them to you until you see your GP. So there's not enough for you to do the same damage to yourself, Nanette," is what she would say. And I said, "You know, thank you, but no thank you. I'm actually not going to touch anymore. At no point have they really helped, ever. And I'm going to stick with it this time. I'm not going to touch them again." So that's what I did. So I left them there, and she said, "Oh, you're going to get very unwell. You'll really suffer with this." And you know, I did. I really did suffer. So the withdrawal of all of those together that my GP had put me on was absolutely diabolical. It was horrific. I thought the first time was bad, but this was truly, truly awful. I would not recommend anybody to go through this. It was, from what I had read, when I was reading for desperate attempts how to make yourself feel better, people said it was just like coming off heroin. It was as right. bad as coming off heroin. So you had a week of writhing around in pain, in sweats on the bed. You cannot eat, you cannot do anything. It was absolutely awful. But that convinced me that if something can have that much of a powerful effect on your brain, you know, to come off it, what is it going to do to your brain long term? It cannot be healthy, it cannot be good if it's got that strong a hold of your brain. But I also made another decision that this time, because we were living in a house that throughout all of these years we'd kind of grown out of with having, you know, more children, there was a lot of renovation work being done in the house, and I had decided that I would move again, myself and the children, to a house that didn't need any work doing, so that Danny could focus on getting the house done, because he really couldn't do much whilst we were there. So I did move again the second time, and I moved down to Chester, and I changed everything, absolutely everything. But this time I changed my food as well, and I decided, okay, I have this tumour that I was diagnosed with a couple of years before, had never gone through the surgery, but I had all of these other symptoms in my body, and I thought, okay, I'm going to find someone that can help me with a dietary lifestyle change, a dietary change that can effectively put my body into a state of repair, that's going to reverse anything that had gone on. And I found a program. Am I allowed to say the name of the program?
Yeah.
It was Dr. Axe, AXE. He has this fantastic program where effectively you're healing the gut. And I had learned at this time that a huge amount of mental health issues and autoimmune problems and everything else actually start in the gut, not in the brain. And it was just a huge eye-opener, and I thought, how could I have gone through all these years of studying, especially you're such a medical side to things, and I didn't know this. I did not know any of this. We had spent perhaps a couple of weeks touching on nutrition, but that was it, you know. And it just, I couldn't believe it, that there was all of this information I knew nothing about. So I changed my diet completely. You know, I brought in kefir. I made my own goat's milk kefir, raw goat's milk kefir with these kefir grains, which are make a wonderful probiotic, you know. And they were there to replenish the damage that of all the, you know, to put the gut flora right for a start. However, to repair any damage, I was using broths, natural broths, because it was invaluable to repairing the body. I changed all of my food to organic, absolutely everything organic. I got rid of as many chemicals in my environment as I could. So all my clothing, my bedding, my wash products, my toiletries, absolutely everything. So the house had no chemicals apart from what was already there in the paint and everything else. And I changed this on my children as well. Now, my son, who was diagnosed with Asperger's, he actually suffered with IBS, terrible eczema, lumps of his hair would come out. He would get really big black bags under his eyes, and you know, he was just very, very skinny and very white, and you know, he just couldn't get nutrition into him. And my younger son, he was very fussy about also, I mean, they were both fussy about textures, to be honest, but my younger son Cassius, he would drop like that ill in so often, sort of 2-3 times a month, that he would have a sky high temperature. He couldn't keep anything down, he was throwing up constantly, and this was all since the vaccines. And my younger daughter, who didn't have any vaccines, she doesn't have any of that at all. So I thought, well, obviously, if it's going to help me, you know, I'm going to do the same with them because it's healthy for them. And but the biggest surprise to me was when my son, who had not been officially diagnosed as being autistic, however, he had much stronger symptoms than my older son. He just changed. He started looking at you. He started coming up and voluntarily giving you hugs. He started talking. This is something he had never done. He was 4 years old when we moved. He had never spoke. He's now 5. And I just couldn't believe it. I was just, you know, phoning Danny in Scotland. Oh, you'll not believe this is just amazing, you know. And then I really started to look at my children, and my older son, his eczema went away, his IBS went away. He complains a lot about the food, I have to be honest. He wasn't too impressed. You know, avocado, ooh, you know, it's green and it's slimy. You know, they weren't too happy, so I had to be quite creative, inventive, and turn them into, yes, very, very inventive. So I would say, call them nice smoothies or milkshakes and things, you know. And they were fine. So I mixed everything together. But I was absolutely determined that I was going to use this nutrition that I had found that had specifically been used in the treatment of cancer. So this chap, Dr. Axe, his mother was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And I went through this whole program with her, and she's now in her 70s, and she's, you know, she's water skiing down, you know, across the sea, and she runs marathons and does all of these amazing things. And I thought, well, if this can help somebody who has this diagnosis, forgive me, I can't actually remember what her cancer was, but you know, I know that I definitely had a growth, I had this tumor, yeah. I definitely had a lot of symptomology. And I'm hoping that it would make it better. And it did. It not only did it lift that heavy, heavy cloud, it lifted the fatigue, it sorted out my IBS. I had patches of my hair over the years that had fallen out. So like my eyebrows had fell out and my lumps of hair had fallen out. And, you know, all of these horrible things that were happening. And it all just changed. It all just went away.
Well, I mean, proponents of the Gerson therapy will often say how, okay, Gerson therapy is for cancer, but actually while you're busy treating yourself for cancer, all the other chronic conditions you've got will go away as well. You know, they'll also be treated by it.
Yeah.
Because, of course, they are all one thing, really. Yeah, they're all just a body not working properly.
Exactly, yeah. So that was why... So I looked at healing the gut in myself and in my children, and in doing that, it brought my son out of this non-communicative
must have been absolutely spectrum. Amazing.
It was phenomenal. I mean, don't, you know, he still has signs of it being there, you know, But it is much more manageable, and I would say for him more than for me, because being a parent, you'll put up, you know, you'll go through anything that you have to do for your children. But for him, I used to get so disheartened for him because he wanted so much to do things but struggled so much as well. And so, but it just became such a joy to see him thriving. It became such a joy to see my older son, who had never had any friends at that point. He was always, you know, he'd be the one when in the playground children would say, "You can be the goalpost and we'll kick the ball off you and try and get it in the goal." And Sonny was more than happy to stand there.
Just be the goalpost.
Yeah, he would say, "Look at me, I'm joining in, I'm playing football." But he wasn't, you know, they were using him like that. But I could never say anything because it would upset him tremendously.
Of course.
So, but then again, but all of that changed. And he is now, he too is thriving. And I've now brought this into Danny. I've implemented this in Danny. And Danny, he's a joiner, a master craftsman, actually, and he works very hard, and he was struggling with sort of arthritis and lots of other not very healthy conditions. He would struggle with his gut as well. And it has completely changed him around for him. You know, it's still a learning curve.
So how long since the big moment, you know, since you walked out of that hospital and you started on this
journey? I was in hospital in August last year, so August 2015. It was, I think, the middle of August, because it was Danny's 40th at the end of August, which so I'll never forget the date because I felt terrible about that. But I moved down to Chester on the 26th of September. So, and it was from, so it took me a month to sort of find somewhere and make this decision that things were going to get better. But I didn't actually start this dietary change until the end of September.
So you're talking about like 9 months
about
or something.
About 9 months, yeah.
9 months, and in that time you've gone from where you were to sitting in front of me looking very healthy,
yes,
as I said at the beginning.
Yeah.
And your whole family's actually regained health as well in extraordinary ways.
They have. The other changes as well. I've redirected my career now. So I am now studying, doing naturopathic medicine and focusing on naturopathic nutrition. I'm doing that through the College of Naturopathic Medicine, CNM, but up in Edinburgh I'm doing it with. And I couldn't be happier. I'm doing yoga, you know, things I struggled to do anything before.
Well, yeah.
Taking up running again, and I just feel as though somebody has given me a chance to have my life back.
Mm.
And I also feel, part of me feels as though this was meant to happen, because deep down I've always had this love of holistic approaches to anything. You know, it's always been my natural go-to has always been something a bit more natural, and but I had believed that I had to go down the mainstream route of medicine, because that's what you do, you know.
Yeah.
You obviously, that's, you want to help people, this is what you have to do. I was not really aware that there was an alternative path that could take you down that route to help people, but using all the, you know, complementary holistic approaches that there are. So it's almost as though I've taken a very, very, very long, wide berth to get to where I'd always intended on going. Very wide berth.
Very wide.
Very personal.
You only just
very
made
difficult.
It. Yeah.
I did. I mean, you know, I cannot thank my eldest daughter, Jessica, and my partner, Danny, enough, because had it not been for, you know, Danny's love of me, he could easily have left so many times with all of this.
It happens.
It does,
it's
happen.
Very
the
common
stress of
those sort of difficulties break marriages.
Absolutely.
Up.
And you know, and we did have our difficult times, don't get me
sure
wrong, it was very, very tough. But he was just determined that, you know, we would get through this, and he pushed and pushed. And to his own detriment, he made himself quite unwell. He got very low and ended up, I didn't know at the time that he'd actually, you know, gone to speak to the GP himself about how he was feeling. So you know, there's an awful lot that went on that I just wasn't aware of, and what my children went through, I've clearly discussed all of this with them, because my most important thing now not only is the health side but mental health. I don't want, if there's anything that my children need to discuss or go through, you know, I want to be able to be there for them to help them, but also to spread awareness, and that's, you know, why I'm so happy, why I ended up going along to the Yes to Life seminar. I'm just couldn't be more thrilled to have come across this and to have the opportunity.
Yeah. So, sort of in summary, talking about the sort of the orthodox approach to medicine, I think you and I would both agree that there's many aspects of it which are marvellous, which are absolutely wondrous what they can actually do to help people, particularly with sort of, you know, if you like, mechanical issues, you know, where you've got to chop a piece out or you've got to repair something or whatever it is, amazing what they can do.
Yeah.
But when it comes to both chronic conditions and mental conditions, they're, in a way, they're sort of completely barking up the wrong tree somewhere. They're looking at somebody who's in an unhealthy state and then they're giving them things that make them actually less healthy, funnily enough.
That's rather
than thinking that the main thing we need to do here is restore this person's health and then all the problems will go away. And yeah, that's barely in the picture. I mean, your GP's attempts to tell you to eat some meat were about as far as it got in that direction, really, wasn't it? You know, the other things are all to control things, and clearly in your situation they seem to be like pouring petrol on a fire rather than controlling it actually. But that was the intention, wasn't it?
Yeah.
All these things are going to control your anxiety, control your inflammation, you know, this is what they're all about. And of course, controlling things does nothing for the actual problem at all.
Not at
it
all.
Just maybe makes you able to get through another day.
I was actually given a diagnosis of Asperger's as well.
You are right.
Because during the time when my GP had given me the huge surge of medication when I moved back to Scotland, he said, look, I want you to go and see somebody. Well, who he had sent me, referred me to go and see, was also a consultant psychologist who he wanted to do an evaluation to find out, you know, if there was any underlying health conditions such as bipolar or something, or, you know, obviously this other chap had said BPD.
Yes.
So I went to see this guy, and I had met him on a number of occasions, a few sessions, had to fill out lots of questionnaires and whatnot, as you do. And at the end of it, he said, you score incredibly high for Asperger's. And I, and you know, and he brought Danny in, and he'd contacted my parents and things and found out what I was like as a child. And yeah, they said I'd scored really highly. However, I was not well when this was done. I was not able to function very well.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I believe now that had I, you know, if I went through this now, it would be nothing like, you know, I don't even think I would get a diagnosis at all.
Mm.
I mean, there are similar, Danny does say, you can be a bit funny, you're a little bit OCD and such things. But, you know, that's just, I think that's just me.
But that's interesting, isn't it? When you look at Asperger's as a sort of condition, you know, and you don't relate it to what people are doing in their life in any way, then it seems like it's something you have or you don't have it, you know, or whatever. And then they'd look back at your childhood and those things. But they would never look at your life conditions now and say, well, maybe it's because got a bad diet or because that doesn't come into it. There's no way is it something that you could get the symptoms of and then them go away again when you got healthy.
Yeah.
It's just like you've got it or you haven't. And so that the power of that message that actually what we're doing, what we're putting into ourselves every day affects not just our physical body, but also our emotional state, our mental state. You know, all these things change our worldview.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's completely missing from the picture, and therefore,
and it's the most vital key, as far as I'm concerned, from what I can see. It's the
absolutely.
Most relevant.
When you
part.
Talk about health, health is a very rounded. It's a holistic thing, as you were saying. It's to do with how you know, you just ask somebody how they're feeling, and they say, "I feel great," and that means they feel physically great, they feel mentally great, they feel emotionally great. All those things, because if any one of them is missing, they don't feel great. In fact, so.
That's very true. And, you know, and I lived a fairly healthy life before I had Jessica.
Mm.
So, you know, I didn't take any medications at all. I never did during my childhood or any time. You know, I'm the type of person I would not reach for a paracetamol if I had a headache. I would just, you know. I never really suffered them, though, you know, when I was younger. Mm. And the same with food. I was a vegetarian. I was fairly healthy.
Yeah.
And I think that was what got me through my first 21 years of life, the fact that actually I was fairly healthy.
Right.
But then it was with the change of that, both dietary and medicinal, that things coupled with a potential, you know, a predisposition to certain things. I agree, sure, there are some people who are predisposed to things.
Yeah.
I think it was just the trigger. I think it was the switch.
Mm.
The one thing that, you know, started it unravelling. However, through a lack of my own research as much as anything else, I just blindly went through this vortex and it just got, you know, spun more and more and more out of control. But it has been, you know, 39 now, 21 when I had Jessica, it has been a long learning curve.
Mm, it has. Anyway, it's a great story, which is why I wanted to interview them. The great bit about it is that, of course, in this incredibly short time, you're back, you know, and
yeah,
that things are looking good. And, you know, the sheer power of the fact you just took things into your own hands and you've done this is just like an enormously great message for people to get. And, you know, this show's all about cancer. We haven't talked about cancer very much, but
no,
doesn't matter. Because, you know, chronic disease is chronic disease. They're all just a body that's not working properly. So the fact that you can go from the kind of situations you've described, both physically and mentally, and be where you are today through your own efforts is a message that's worth hearing for a lot of people. So thank you very much indeed.
Well, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to talk about it.
Now I've come to the offices of the Alliance for Natural Health to catch Rob Verkirk at the end of the day to see what lessons we can learn from Nanette's story. Apologies for a short spell of background clatter from the canteen staff who arrived to clear the decks next door. Hope it's not too distracting. So, hi Rob, thanks very much for coming on the show.
Fantastic to be here again with you, Robin.
What I'm looking for here is a bit of expert opinion on the material we've just heard. I think you'll agree it's an extremely wide-ranging personal health story, one that's both shocking and inspiring. In including her story, we've travelled sort of well beyond the boundaries of what we normally do on the show, cancer and cancer treatment, but deliberately so, as I think there's so many issues raised about the approach to regaining health and equilibrium in a host of different circumstances. So I'm interested to kind of tease out the take-home messages about approaching health problems. The ANH, of course, does have an interest in all branches of healthcare, and I imagine you've got quite a bit to say about Nanette's story.
Yes, well, you know, the interesting thing is to, first of all, celebrate the fact that Nanette is now in a very good state of health, and there's been profound influences in her own health, her quality of life, her children's health, the reparation of a marriage. You know, there's so many aspects that really cover our own health. And of course, she's now got a very clear path in her life. It's an entirely different path to the one that she was going to take. But it does show that life is really about a journey. And I think if we are too fixated in exactly what form that journey is taking, we kind of miss the point of life to a degree.
And we have to listen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, perhaps what would be useful is to pick out some of the profound learnings that we all gain from her story.
Mm.
And one of them is that if we compartmentalize our knowledge base too far, we fail to diagnose complex conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think rather than necessarily looking at any failings at any one of the consultants that saw her and no doubt had a very great interest in trying to resolve her complex problems, she didn't quite fit the standard case scenario particularly well. And because each specialist has a particular area of specialism, it was very difficult for them to look at the body as a whole and to look at the overall picture. And of course, it then really shows us how when an individual is put in the driving seat of their health and is left to their own devices and has the resources, the, you know, educational and intellectual capacity and the motivation to try and find a solution, given enough time, even in very complex situations like this, they end up on their own achieving more than an army of specialists can achieve.
Right, just because they're pulling together all these strands.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm.
And so that, I think, would be the second overall sort of big picture finding from listening to Nanette's story. The third one, I think, is that, and it's particularly topical now, is to understand that food is medicine. You know, we so often are we've learned from dietitians that food is really a source of energy. And of course, it is so much more than just a source of sustenance and energy. And here we see an example of some very severe adverse effects from medications where they're largely treating symptoms. And we see actually food being the most profound medicine because ultimately it was dealing with underlying conditions. And I think... although that you can buy food in a supermarket, we don't generally as a society regard the food as being of medical significance. It's something we need to consume to keep us healthy. But here we've seen an example of it having profound effects, not only on the mother, but also on the children. And possibly, a fourth general point to raise is, of course, this notion that this observation that some of the children Cassius, I think, in particular, did react adversely and develop much more severe symptoms or even the first symptoms of ASD following vaccination. That is a hugely controversial subject, but it is one that is observed over and over again. Now, what if an enlightened GP had said, your older child exhibits signs of being on the spectrum, in other words, Asperger's, and therefore there is a risk that, or an increased risk that other children may be vaccinated, and she's seen proof of the pudding in terms of her oldest child and her youngest child having no such symptoms and not having been vaccinated. And of course that raises very, very interesting questions.
Certainly does. So there's a lot of issues here, certainly. So maybe you can just go a little bit more into some of those. The food as medicine, first of all. You feel like this is something that we've lost in a way. Traditionally, food was seen as medicine, I think. There were always like sacred foods and foods that were reserved for, when you're going to war and this kind of thing, so they knew that particular foods could bring particular qualities along and that some were extremely nurturing, and they were reserved, some foods, for these things, weren't they? And we seem to have lost sight of that. And I was even thinking back to there are things that my mother was doing, was feeding us, which were kind of known things that, we would be given liver as children, things like this, and cod liver oil and things, because they were incredibly nutritious. But in fact, that kind of thinking, I think, is just not prevalent anymore.
Exactly. It's not prevalent in our society, but it is absolutely prevalent in many other societies. So if you go to China, you'll find that you can go to a restaurant and pick up a medicinal menu that will provide you with particular meals to eat when you have menopausal symptoms or if you've got immune problems. So you can buy meals very readily, and at home people cook medicinal foods. And the same applies to other great cultures, and Ayurveda, exactly the same thing applies. You consume particular foods to deal with particular conditions. And even if we look in Western society, we'll see that our grandparents did it without thinking about it. So,
right. It was like you just taught from mother to daughter, this is what you do.
Precisely. So the concept of having a broth when you're not feeling well to deal with the gut... we now understand that a lot of that is to do with the very high nucleotide levels within the broths that are the building blocks for new cells. And of course, not only does the gut mucosa itself, but the microbiome, where we have in a healthy gut, something like 10 times more microbial cells than we have human cells in the body, around 100 trillion cells. All of these need to keep reproducing and turning over. So our gut represents the area of most rapid turnover of cells. If we don't have the building blocks to create those cells, so we need plenty of natural folate. We also need starting materials for the building of RNA and DNA, and that comes in the form of the nucleotides. And while we have specific pathways in the body to produce and recycle DNA, we can generate some of these starting materials. We also, particularly in times of great need, we need to consume
import
these in the diet. What we've seen over the last 50 years in particular, since the massive mechanization of agriculture and food production, is a huge drop off in the amount of nucleotides within the Western diet. So again, if you go east and you go to Japan, you will consume a lot by consuming fermented foods. Mm. So Annette also talks about the kefir that she's consuming.
Yes.
So again, having these fermented foods is actually putting live probiotics into the gut,
yeah,
as well as having the broths that provide the various building blocks to create new cells. So starting by fixing the gut is in so many cultures the starting point to health, and it's something that unfortunately you're not going to learn a lot from your local consultant or your GP.
No.
Although there are, as we find with Rangan and Rupi and other people that I know you'll be getting on your program, it is beginning to change.
It
and
is.
It's interesting,
yeah,
that the doctors who have a particularly strong interest in this tend to be doctors of non-European origin who find this
it's
kind of thinking.
Natural.
Yes, exactly.
Mm. Mm. Okay, look, any one of these subjects on here could take us an hour. And so we're going to have to fly through them a bit. There's an enormous use here of drugs for psychiatric problems, you know, for depression, for anxiety, this kind of thing, sleep issues. All of these are essentially treating symptoms, aren't they? There's
correct.
All of them are symptom treatments.
And have side effects as well.
And they have side effects. And the side effects are quite often difficult to distinguish from the actual problem you're having in the first place. And, you know, they seem to, you know, to be in a situation where you're taking lots of drugs in order to get through is an anxiety-promoting situation to be in. And so, you know, there seem to be huge risks and problems associated with these drugs about, you know, what the, as you say, the side effects and what they're actually doing to you. And there's no attempt amongst all this to actually deal with the problem. This seems like a huge alarm bell going off to me when treatment looks like that.
Yes, you know, I think what we're seeing within the profession of psychiatry now is some very forward-thinking psychiatrists who are coming forward and essentially applying the same kind of thinking that we're seeing, say, in the field of functional medicine to psychiatry and saying, look, just by classifying a cluster of symptoms and deciding that it fits the criteria in the DSM-5, for example, and deciding that this person has a particular type of personality disorder, and then looking down the list and determining that that particular disorder requires drug X or Y, is actually not a logical or effective way of providing the best possible outcome for that patient. Works wonderfully for the drug company, and of course it's quite an efficient way of running your practice because you can diagnose and treat pretty quickly. The issue, of course, is looking at the underlying problems. And when you start to look at the underlying problems, one of the extraordinary things that is becoming apparent is that looking at the gut and the gut mucosa, because there is such an intimate connection between the gut and the brain, is the starting point. The other area that where there is now an increasing amount of focus is on neurotransmitter balance. So you can undertake various tests to see where you're at in terms of your neurotransmitter levels, and those can be manipulated quite easily. And guess what is one of the most effective ways of manipulating neurotransmitters is again via the diet. So again, it almost requires an entirely new branch of psychiatry. And of course, one of the areas that is probably formally evolving rapidly in this area is the area of PNI, or psychoneuroimmunology, that shows that there is this huge interconnection between the endocrine system, the immunological system, and the nerve system. And if you start to deal with this as a whole, and you can modify expression of genes by changing what you're eating, you can get fantastic results. And of course, Annette's story is an example of this.
Right, okay. Energy problems. They seem to be such a common feature of the sort of modern diseases, don't they? This total lack of energy that so many people experience. Do you want to say a little bit about that?
Well, yes. The bottom line is that lack of energy, lack of mitochondrial reserve. It is the mitochondria within our cells that actually generates energy. And if you look at the commonalities that link so many chronic or non-specific diseases, they often have a common underlying origin. And one of the most common is mitochondrial insufficiency. In other words, having problems with the amount of energy you can produce through your mitochondria because either they have a very small volume or you don't have enough of them, the density is low, or a combination, commonly the combination of those two things. And one of the reasons we see such a profound interest now as for exercise in medicine is because exercise and, say, high-intensity interval training, any kind of physical activity encourages greater mitochondrial volume, greater mitochondrial plasticity, and greater mitochondrial density.
Right.
So you'll see that in Annette's case, she's now saying, do you know what, I'm running again. And by running, what she's doing is actually generating more mitochondria. And by doing that, she's actually preventing the onset of the diseases that she's been so severely afflicted with. But of course, on top of that, you have inflammation, oxidative stress, and immunological dysfunction being the other factors that are so commonly associated. Now, she had all of those going
on.
She
did, yeah.
And the more we look at all of the chronic diseases, whether it's cancer or neurological problems, they relate to these factors. And of course, the most powerful medicines we know are diet and lifestyle modifications. So, you know, when did you last hear your GP talking about food as medicine or exercise as medicine? They're both very, very powerful medicines.
I'm glad to see it acknowledged in the Daily Telegraph just recently in the field of cancer.
Absolutely.
So, about time. So, I want to pick up on what you were saying about this over-specialisation and nobody being able to see the wood for the trees. Can you describe what you think the answer to that problem is?
I think one of the answers is collaboration. Multidisciplinary collaboration, there is a shift now where you have complex diseases where instead of each specialism operating in isolation, that there is much more interaction between the various specialists. And what you need to have as well is a shift in the training, so that when a doctor decides to engage in a particular specialism, they don't necessarily stop learning as part of their continuing professional development other aspects that relate to what they're doing. Another big transition we're beginning to see is actually, you know, peer-to-peer learning, where patients are put in the driving seat of health and they engage with other patients who have similar conditions. In Nanette's case, we hear about someone who's learnt an awful lot about her situation. She's in a very strong position to be helping others with similar conditions. And, you know, if you look at the fields of, say, thyroid disease, you look at the fields of cancer, there has been a huge amount that is learned by patients with these conditions learning from each other. And this is something that shouldn't happen in, you know, back rooms, you know, or in underground dens away from the prying eye of the oncologist or the consultant, it should happen in a very much more controlled environment,
right,
where the medical specialists themselves can learn from the patient. So the whole of healthcare becomes, you know, one of the difficulties we have in medicine is the arrogance that occurs. We tend to treat our consultants as gods, and we, you know, worship at their altar. And really, the real progressive doctors are basically becoming guides in the system and are working with their patients, understanding fully that it is necessary for their patients to be in the driving seat of their own health, so they can learn not only from their consultants and specialists, but also from each other, so that people with similar conditions are brought together so they can learn about
Brilliant.
What's working.
Yeah, I think that's really important. Okay, one of the sort of the hard facts that emerged during this whole incredibly long and grey period was this diagnosis of the pituitary problem. And Nanette looked at what was on offer and decided, well, no, I'm not going to go for this. And she was frightened off by the prospect of lifetime HRT. And she came up with her own conclusion that her body created this problem and it was therefore completely capable of getting rid of it. Briefly, what do you feel that was a reasonable assumption of hers to make at that point?
You see, I think she already had enough knowledge to understand that cancer was an expression in her body that was caused by an environment that was not what it should have been. The difficulty for many people when they hear the C word, they immediately, you know, feel that this is something that is foreign to them. It's not of the body's making. That it should be treated in a somewhat Pasteurian fashion, as if it's an infectious disease, and therefore either needs to be given a heavy dose of radiation, chemotherapy, or it needs to be cut out, or a combination of those things. She had the understanding, it's usually shunned on by the oncology profession, but she was, you know, if she'd been a child with that same diagnosis, as we've seen with a number of cases in the UK, it's a very, very different kettle of fish. She was able to
have that choice.
Exactly, she was able to make that choice herself. And I think it is profound, and there are many people in that situation where they choose to take that decision. It's regarded often by their loved ones as a brave decision to make. But I think the key is, if you're able to monitor what's going on closely and you're able to see results, these results often occur very, very quickly.
Mm.
And so within a 3-month period, if you're seeing an improvement, why not continue?
Oh,
and and that has been observed many times. Unfortunately, they're not sufficient numbers of case reports in the medical literature. So that is why so many oncologists are blind to the sheer commonality of stories like Nanette's.
Mm. Well, she didn't actually mention this in the interview, but you and our listeners will be interested to know that her hunch was actually correct. The growth has entirely disappeared as a result of her own programme of lifestyle changes.
That is fantastic news.
Nice,
and it's important, really, that her case does get written up as a case along with others, so that the medical profession can learn. But no, it's a fantastic story, and amazing that she's continuing and now going to be practicing naturopathic medicine.
Herself, yes. That happens to very many people, isn't it? Regaining their own health through an alternative path gives them a personal interest. All right, well, look, that's it. We've run out of time. thanks so much. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show, and it's enormously helpful to have a kind of scientific take on a personal story like that.
Thank you, Robin, and we look forward to hearing more from Nanette and her family in future. They people, you know, who've had that kind of amazing transition, for them to go public with it can be enormously helpful and inspiring and motivating to others.
Agreed. It's a brave thing to do, but as you say, enormously helpful. That wraps up Nanette's story.
I hope you found the two shows compelling listening and also useful and inspirational. Next week, I shall be speaking to John Peers, who's campaigning to change the way cancer treatments are developed and to highlight the endemic problems that are holding progress back. Meanwhile, please do follow the charity Yes to Life and me, Robin Daly, on Facebook and Twitter. Goodbye.